Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, DNA Tests, Expert Testimony, and the Confrontation Clause Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 6, 2011, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Williams v. Illinois. The issue in this case is whether a defendant's Confrontation Clause rights were violated when an expert witness for the prosecution testified at trial about the results of a DNA test in which the expert witness had not been involved and which had been performed by an out-of-state analyst who was not present at the trial. To discuss the case, we have John O'Quinn, who is a partner at Kirkland & Ellis, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. O'Quinn.
The Supreme Court recently held oral argument in Williams v. Illinois, in which it once again took up the scope and nature of the rights protected by the Confrontation Clause of the Constitution in the wake of its landmark decision in Crawford v. Washington. This is the latest case involving treatment of forensic evidence from laboratory testing following Melendez-Diaz v. Massachusetts and Bullcoming v. New Mexico, both of which were decided 5-4. The court is again faced with distinguishing between testimonial statements, which raise confrontation concerns, and all other hearsay statements, something the court's been struggling with ever since Crawford. This is indeed an area of the law that has produced what some might see as strange bedfellows, with Justices Scalia and Thomas frequently joining with Justice Ginsburg in arguing for a robust interpretation of the Confrontation Clause, while justices such as Kennedy, Breyer, and Alito have frequently advocated an approach that gives more deference to the practicalities the government faces when presenting such testing evidence. The case looks, once again, to be closely divided, with Justice Kagan potentially favoring the government and Justice Kennedy poised to be the swing vote. In this particular case, the petitioner, Sandy Williams, was convicted after a bench trial of having abducted and sexually assaulted the victim, identified as LJ. After the assault, LJ's mother called the police and was taken to an emergency room where doctors conducted an exam and took DNA evidence, which was sealed in a criminal evidence collection kit along with a sample of her blood. The samples were later sent to the state crime lab for testing and analysis, which in turn sent them to the Cellmark Diagnostic Laboratory for a DNA analysis. Cellmark returned the samples to the state crime lab with a male DNA profile that it had determined. Williams was later arrested for an unrelated offense, and a blood sample was taken pursuant to court order. His blood was determined by a computer to match that of the male DNA profile taken from the sample that had been collected from the victim, LJ. The state's expert then separately reviewed the DNA profile determined by Cellmark and the blood sample taken from Williams, and concluded that they were a match. At Williams' trial, the state's expert testified that a technique known as polymerase chain reaction testing is generally accepted in the scientific community as one of the most modern types of DNA testing. She also testified that Cellmark was an accredited crime lab and described the chain of custody for the samples that had been sent to Cellmark's laboratory. She further testified that the DNA profile determined by Cellmark from the sample collected from the victim was a match with the DNA of the blood sample taken from Williams, noting specifically that the probability of the same DNA profile occurring in unrelated individuals was over 1 in 8 quadrillion. Cellmark's report itself was never admitted into evidence, and no one from Cellmark ever testified to confirm that the DNA profile that it had developed had in fact come from the DNA sample taken from the victim. On cross-examination, the state's expert in fact conceded that she did not perform the testing on the DNA evidence taken from the victim and that she had based her expert conclusion on Cellmark's testing. Williams objected to the evidence regarding the testing done by Cellmark as violating the Confrontation Clause and moved to strike the expert testimony that was based on the data received from Cellmark. The trial court rejected that argument and found the issue of reliance on the data received from Cellmark was one that went to the weight of the evidence rather than its admissibility under the Confrontation Clause. Following his conviction, the Illinois Court of Appeals and the Illinois Supreme Court both affirmed. Those courts reasoned that the Cellmark data had itself not been admitted for the truth of the matter asserted, which is all that Crawford would prohibit, but instead for the limited purpose of explaining the basis for the expert's opinion. Those courts rejected the argument that the expert had merely served as a conduit for introducing other prohibited evidence, but instead that she had used her own expertise to compare the sample provided by Cellmark and the blood sample taken from Williams. In the U.S. Supreme Court, petitioner argued that the expert's opinion necessarily hinged on the veracity of the Cellmark Laboratory's determination of the DNA profile from the sample collected from the victim. According to petitioner, the fact finder necessarily relied on Cellmark's determination, conveyed through the expert's testimony, without the defendant having the opportunity to cross-examine anyone involved in Cellmark's findings. Thus, Williams seeks the exclusion of all such evidence. The state of Illinois, supported by numerous other state amici, argued that the rule that Williams would impose would be the end of DNA evidence in court because of the burden involved in producing all of the people involved in DNA testing at a laboratory such as Cellmark. The state's position is that it is well settled that experts are entitled to rely on hearsay, and this well-recognized exception to the hearsay rule should not run afoul of the Confrontation Clause. The United States, as amicus, supported the state of Illinois. In so doing, it drew a line between the chain of custody issues, which do not implicate the Confrontation Clause, and the evidence regarding Cellmark's determination of the DNA profile. The United States' position is that the expert did not improperly testify as to the veracity or accuracy of Cellmark's determination. She only testified about the comparison that she herself had made. Separate and apart from that, the fact finder was entitled to determine from circumstantial evidence that there was a link between the expert's testimony and the facts of this particular case. As the Deputy Solicitor General put it at argument, the fact finder could infer that the DNA examined by Cellmark came from the sample collected from the victim, while relying on inferential circumstantial evidence to connect Cellmark's determination to this case might be weak evidence. It was not a violation of the Confrontation Clause, according to the United States. As one might imagine, given the history of Confrontation Clause cases in recent years, oral argument was spirited and vigorous. Justices Scalia and Ginsburg asked questions that made clear that they viewed the expert as conveying that Cellmark's DNA determination came from the sample collected from the victim, that this information was offered for the truth of the matter asserted, and that there was no opportunity for the defendant to challenge that testimonial assertion. Both justices repeatedly asked what relevance the expert's testimony would have had if she was not necessarily relying on, and thus conveying, the fact that the DNA evidence had come from the sample collected from the victim. In other words, the testimony of the expert turns on the truth of what Cellmark determined. Likewise, Justice Sotomayor vigorously questioned the state's position that it was not relying on Cellmark's determination for the truth of the matter asserted. On the other hand, Justices Alito and Breyer asked why this case was any different from the legion of cases in which experts testify in court every day. And Justice Breyer pointedly raised a policy concern that if reliance on such routine testing becomes too burdensome, prosecutors will decline to rely on what he characterized as more reliable DNA evidence in favor of less reliable eyewitness testimony, which would be a bad result for the criminal justice system as a whole. Justice Kagan, who supplied the fifth vote in the Bull-Cummings case, seemed skeptical of Williams's position, asking why this wasn't simply about a failure of proof rather than a Confrontation Clause issue at all. However, later in questioning the United States, she expressed concern that a fact finder, typically a jury, although this was a bench trial, would be misled into relying on the expert's representations about what the laboratory had done, despite disclaimers that such representations were not offered for the truth of the matter asserted. Given his dissents in Melendez-Diaz and Bullcoming, Justice Kennedy would have seemed an unlikely vote for Williams in this case. However, he raised questions about how this case could be decided differently from Melendez-Diaz and Bullcoming, describing the person who did the testing at Cellmark as playing the role of Hamlet in the play, in other words, being the key actor, and the absence of that person from trial and the lack of an opportunity to cross-examine that person seemed troubling to Justice Kennedy. The questioning at argument reflected a deep-seated division between Justice Scalia on the one hand and Justices Breyer and Alito on the other in the context of the Confrontation Clause and the admission of laboratory test results. The Scalia-Alito divide is perhaps expected, given the latter's experience as a federal prosecutor and as someone who would see the practical challenges and arguably unnecessary burden required by Justice Scalia's approach. The Scalia-Breyer divide, however, is perhaps more interesting in that it reflects fundamental differences in these jurists' views. Scalia's democratic libertarian instincts put his faith in the rough and tumble of the jury and the ability of defendants to cross-examine live witnesses at trial. Justice Scalia often bristles at the notion that opaque pronouncements of experts should decide a defendant's fate. Justice Breyer, on the other hand, often has technocratic instincts, welcoming the reliance on expert decision-makers, preferring their expertise to other forms of evidence that he might view as less reliable and, quite simply, messier. Although it is difficult to predict outcomes based on argument, given the history in recent Confrontation Clause cases, it seems likely there are 5 votes to find a Confrontation Clause violation in this case. Unless the state can pick off Justice Kagan, the court appears poised for a repeat of its Bull Cumming versus New Mexico lineup. And even if Justice Kagan were to be swayed, Justice Kennedy seemed predisposed to find this case as controlled by Bull Cumming and Melendez-Diaz. Regardless of the outcome, however, it remains to be seen whether the court will be able to provide sought-after guidance as to what exactly constitutes testimonial evidence that implicates the Confrontation Clause and what does not.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.